Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Pop.
The views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
Season 2, Episode 6 of Stay Out of My Crease. Today is February 8th, 2017. If you want to call in and join our discussion tonight, or even call in with your own questions, comments, complaints, we take it all here. The phone number to call in is 646-668-8467. If you want to email us, our email address is stayoutofmycrease@gmail.com. And we are also on Facebook, which is Stay Out of My Crease. You can like the page there. And we are also on Twitter, and that's at Stay Out of Crease. We are also syndicated on Arena Sports Network on Thursday nights, and I do believe also on Friday nights. So I hope you guys are ready. This is our Valentine's Day special, since Valentine's Day is next Tuesday. I didn't want to do it the week after because we may or may not have a special guest on next week. So we're going to do our top 10s tonight. I'm doing the top 10 hottest hockey players of all time, and I'm doing the top 10 hottest hockey players that currently play. And Jimmy is going to do your top 10 hardest hitters. And I think he has a mixed bag of those, so I'm interested. I don't even know Jimmy's list, so this should be interesting. Speaking of my wonderful co-host, let me go ahead and get him on the line. Hey, Jimmy.
Well, so happy Valentine's Day, even though I didn't buy you flowers or a card or hearts or candy or any of that. So, but, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, I'll forgive you this year.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, I found out that there was something special going on in St. Paul, Minnesota this weekend, and it's kind of hockey related.
Yeah, my dad actually brought this up to me earlier tonight. He was talking about the fact that, you know, they have what's called the Red Bull Crashed Ice, and it's a bunch of crazy people is what it is, a bunch of old hockey players and, you know, a bunch of, you know, kids in their 20s or whatever and it's basically the fastest you'll ever see anybody on skates, and it's really hard to describe. It's kind of like a luge contest, you know, where they go down on the sleds, only they're doing it on skates, and they're doing it four at a time, and it's just insane to watch. So if you get a chance, check it out on the website, you know, at the Red Bull Crashed Ice website. St. Paul does it every year as part of their winter carnival thing. So
I'll throw the link up on after our show.
Okay.
I'll throw it up on our Facebook page and also on our Twitter page so people know where to go. Now, you said it's part of the St. Paul Winter Carnival.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, that's something that's big. That's, you know, we're part of the pond hockey deals are involved in that too, and you know, they have the ice sculptures and the ice castle and all that kind of stuff. So it's a way to, it hasn't been as good this year because, well, we didn't really have any winter going on. We had the last couple of days, but when it gets too warm, a lot of those events just don't work. So
yeah, we don't have winter here this year. I think winter is completely avoiding us. It was almost 70 degrees here today. It was so hot that I wore boots to work because I thought it was supposed to get colder because they are calling for snow overnight tonight. But I ended up having to go home at lunch and change because it was so hot. I can understand with you guys, and it's different because I know every time we've talked, there's always snow on the ground.
Right.
And
well,
I believe when
it was 60 degrees warmer there today than it was here. So, you know, think about that.
I'm kind of jealous.
Anyway, this crashed ice thing, to get back to that real quick, it's a nationwide, worldwide thing. And, you know, they keep track of points or whatever. And Amanda Trunso of Blaine, Minnesota, finished in fourth place, but she's currently leading the women's leaderboard this season with 2,300 points, about 500 points more than the nearest competitor. So, you know, it being a Minnesota homer, it's nice to see and especially, you know, my son went to Blaine High School. So it's one of those things where it's nice to be a homer and nice to see somebody doing well from the state, even if it is kind of an interesting niche sport. So they are
right.
Coming up now in Lessar in Canada, in Quebec province, on
February 18th
is when the next – yeah, that's when the next one's going to be. So if you're up there, I know it's up a ways, so it's not like it's downtown St. Paul. It's, I'm sure they won't draw as many people, but I'm also sure that they're going to have probably a better layout because they're going to have all kinds of they're going to have more terrain to work with than they do in St. Paul. They kind of got to go around buildings and stuff in St. Paul. So, but Red Bull usually has it broadcast live on what they call Red Bull TV. So just go to their website. You know, they're not going to send us Red Bull for promoting that, but it is something. And if you go to their site, you can see just how crazy it is. And you go, why? You know, you just wonder why they do that. So.
Right. Yeah, that's a great. I'm glad your dad brought that up to you before we went on air. That was these are fun things. I know we get a lot of compliments on the not so mainstream ice hockey and ice events. So that was a really good thing that your dad brought up. I'm glad he did. I'm glad you brought it up too. So this is an interesting week in the NHL. Claude Julien got fired, but I think everybody kind of suspected that he was going to.
Well, it's tough. He was the longest tenured coach. Well, in fact, that's our first question, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
More mailbag?
Yeah, but I figured I'd just bring it up because it was kind of breaking news.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it is, and we could talk about that more later when we actually get to the mailbag. But, yeah, he was the longest tenured coach in the NHL, and for him to last that long is kind of amazing because NHL coaches just don't seem to last that long, especially compared to some of the other sports. They kind of get the hook, and they get the hook more mid-season than I think any other sport does. So.
And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Correct.
And yes, let's just go ahead and jump into our mailbag. As you said, our first question this week, it comes from Abby, and she asked, will Claude Julien end up in Florida? And also, do you think that he will be on the market very long? I read articles today where a couple of teams have already contacted the Bruins to talk to him. And contacted to talk to him. And I know Florida has been the big buzz in the rumor mill, but I haven't heard anything confirmation-wise. They're not saying which teams have contacted him, and they're not saying, Florida for sure. But, you know, Florida does not have – they have an interim head coach. So do the Islanders and the Blues. So I would assume that one of those teams probably would. Do I think Florida? I think Florida probably has the best chance. But with his, his history and his tenure and everything in the NHL, I don't believe he will be on the market very long. I believe that he will find a job here very, very shortly.
Well, he's already been contacted by Vegas. They haven't met yet. So, and that might be an interesting situation for him out there, being able to build a team. I mean, he was in Boston for 10 years. That's a long time to be a head coach in the NHL. And just imagine now if he could, you know, start from scratch and build his own team. And who better to have than somebody that's been coaching for the last 10 years, picking players of other people's teams? Because, you know, he's been watching them. You know, he's been playing,
right.
You know, coaching against them. So he'll be able to, you know, look at him and go, okay, that's the guy we want. And they'll go, what do you mean? And then he'll be like, well, no, I can see the potential in that guy. So I can see that as a fit. The other thing that I could see as a fit, Kimmy, is Dallas.
Oh, that's a good, good point.
Well, because Dallas last year had the best record in the West. And this year they're 7 points out of making the playoffs. And, you know, there's rumors that, you know, they might go after Marc-Andre Fleury and they might do this or whatever. But Lindy Ruff doesn't have a contract next year. So, I mean, they could easily get out of that contract and not, you know, not have that extended money that they would have to, you know, that normally you have to pay when you fire a coach. So,
right.
I mean, and that's not a bad situation for an experienced coach like that to step into because, I mean, Dallas has talent. They're just not getting
right.
it out of them. So.
Right. Yeah, the coach is not getting that extra oomph from them. And with Julian being a defensive mind, I mean, coming from a West Coast team, that's the kind of coach you kind of want. Because
right.
you want to make sure that they're – because that's why the Wild are so successful this year is because they have such a great defense.
Well, and even the forwards are defensive-minded, and that's – that's kind of how Dallas did it last year and St. Louis did it last year, and neither one of those teams are really acting that way. And, you know, we already saw what happened with Hitch. I don't know how Mike Yeo's going to do. I mean, that was kind of a preconceived deal that Hitch was going to be done at the end of the year anyways. And it's kind of a shame that they let him go before he got a chance to, you know, get into the third spot for all-time coaching wins. So he'll probably end up somewhere too, so. You know,
right.
I guess as long as we're speculating, it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up in Florida. So,
That's a good point. You know, and speaking of, you know, this is a little off topic here, but, you know, speaking of coaches and stuff, Hitchcock, we talked about that last week. I think he was going to hang it up anyway at the end of the year. But I don't know, with the way he was let go, it wouldn't surprise me if he came back to a different team either.
Oh, right. He's another person that, you know, Dallas would love to jump on. And I think he would love to go to Dallas just so he can get back at St. Louis. I mean, he said all the right politically correct things, you know, that they're going to Mike Yeo is this, but you know, inside he's like, I can't believe they let me go. You know, they're in the third spot in the Central, which is not an easy division by any means, behind, you know, Minnesota and Chicago. So the fact that he's got them playing the way they are playing, you know, and you never know coming down the stretch how a team's going to finish out. So, you know, and
right.
that's where an experienced coach like Hitchcock is, you know, would be a good asset. And, you know, I don't know that Mike Yeo is much of an improvement because he was the associate head coach to start with. So it's not like they're bringing in somebody new.
Right. You're right. You know, because when you get fired in that kind of way, you're going to be a little jaded. And like you said, how much fun would it be to come back to a rival?
Exactly. And because they're I think it's 7 points or 8 points or whatever behind St. Louis. So there's enough time to make that up, that's for sure. Especially if
right.
they go out, you know, and, you know, like the one of the rumors is that they're going to go after Marc-Andre Fleury. So, you know, if they could pick him up, well, I know you're not, but if they could go, you know, go after and get somebody like that, you know, or,
right.
you know, even pick up, you know, Shattenkirk from St. Louis, you know, that.
Yeah.
Because he's rumored to be on the trade block, so it's.
He is, because they said they didn't want to sign him back next year. This is his last year, so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that it's a little preempting, but as the offseason comes around at the end of June, it's going to be fun for us to try to keep up with everything because there's going to be a lot.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, that's a good point. And Abby, that was a great question. Thank you for writing us over the week. I like the next question from Ben because I actually saw this and I thought it was really neat. Ben wants to know, what did you think of Larry Fitzgerald skating with the Coyotes?
I thought that was funny.
I did too. I was proud of him because at least he could stand up on skates. They're
well,
not easy.
And that's, well, yeah, and that was the whole gist of it. It was like, oh, you know, he's a Minnesota kid, and he, you know, not everybody from Minnesota skates all that well, and he can't skate at all. So he played football. And, you know, I think played basketball when he was here. So the fact that he actually got out there on the ice, didn't follow, I think he fell a couple of times, but
right.
Was able to stay up on his blades long enough in order to, you know, score the, you know, whatever goal that he did, you know, and put the puck in the net or whatever. But I think the just the relationship that those teams are trying to develop and develop it as a community thing down there is really good. And especially with all the problem the Coyotes are having with trying to get the stadium deal done down there.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting scenario too. You know, but I thought it was great publicity, you know, because an NFL player trying on skates and going out and attempting to play hockey and having fun doing it, he really looked like he was having a lot of fun. That was great publicity too for the NHL. It got people, you know, curious as to, oh, well, look, we have a football player that can go out and skate. So, you know, or get up on skates, I should say, on the ice. But I thoroughly enjoyed watching that video. And again, I agree with you where the relationship between the teams, you know, being a Pittsburgh fan, there's always been a great relationship between the teams in Pittsburgh. So to see it translate into a different city with, you know, the Coyotes and the Cardinals, that was really good. And I think it's really good for the NHL to have that kind of publicity.
Well, and I like the fact that when they asked Shane Doan if he would, you know, when, because he was the one out there with Fitzgerald, because they've been around, both of those guys have been around, you know, the Phoenix area forever. They asked him, you know, if you could play football, what position would you want to play? And he says, well, I don't think I could play football, but if I did play football, I would want to play middle linebacker because that's the position where you seem to be able to hit more people.
Sounds like a hockey player.
Uh-huh.
It definitely does. But yeah, thank you, Ben, for that question. Like I said, that was really fun for us. Like, I think NHL and NBC posted it on Facebook, and that's how I saw it. So that was a fun question, and we thank you so much for listening and asking your question. Our next question comes from Alex.
Well, and actually, to finish that thought too, I don't know if it was last night, but it's coming up this week. They're actually having a bobblehead night at the Coyotes with Larry Fitzgerald in a Coyotes uniform, which I think
very,
is kind of cool.
Very, very cool. That is very cool.
And he's got a little stick in front of him. It's kind of a cute little bobblehead, so I'm sure that'll be worth a lot of money to the Cardinals fans.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, especially if you could get him to sign it. That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What a neat idea. I like that. That was good marketing.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's so cool. I didn't even know that. Our next question comes from Alex, and he wants to know, there have been a lot of milestones in the NHL this year. Which ones do you find impressive, and in your opinion, why are there so many milestones this year?
Well,
there have been. I mean, there have been a lot of milestones. It seems like every time I look at my phone, there's somebody scored like their 500th goal, or, you know, somebody's close to their 1,000 point, or, you know, things like that. And which ones do I find impressive? To be honest, all of them, because it means that you've had such a great career. I can't pinpoint any one milestone that's happened this year that is that's most impressive. As to why there are so many milestones, I think it's just we're in that generation right now where players are playing a little bit longer than normal. I mean, Jágr's 44. He's been playing since the 90s. You know, Cullen's been playing since the late 90s. So I think the players are just, because it's not as physical as it used to be. It's still physical, don't get me wrong, but it's not as brutal as it once was. I think these careers are staying on the ice a little bit longer, especially with the player safety requirements going into effect, especially the concussions. So I think that's why. I think it's just this generation's time. And, you know, in 10, 15 years, we'll be talking about Auston Matthews probably getting 1,000 points or, you know, it's just, that's just the way it works. You know, you have players that play a long time, and then you have these young guys that come in, and then a couple years later, you're talking about them. What's your opinion on this?
Well, you know, you look at a player like Jágr, and he came in later, and then he took some time off, and then he came back. And, yeah, he's 44 years old, and he's still playing, and he's breaking a lot of records because he has that kind of longevity. And everything he does is, I mean, but he played on some pretty gosh darn good Pittsburgh teams where he was able to, you know, accumulate a lot of his points were done there. And you look at a guy like Luongo. I mean, he was stuck in Vancouver forever. I mean, they did have some good runs there for a while, but and then you look at, you know, then he went to Colorado, and now he's down in Florida with Jágr. I think that's, you know, the old deal where that's where, you know, old folks go to retire is down in Florida or Arizona, but they decided not to retire. So, I mean, he's up to third now for goaltenders. And I mean, that's pretty impressive considering how many losing teams he played for, you know.
He's not played for
a whole lot of winners.
Right.
So, yeah, and
you're right about,
you know, player safety now is one thing. I mean, they have more pads. They have more. I mean, they're wearing helmets or whatever. But, you know, it seems like you have two different types of players now. You have the players that respect the game and last for a long period of time, and you have players that don't respect the game and are out after 5 or 6 years because they're, you know, they're useless checks and useless hits and useless fights. So, you know, like my dad says, he says, you know, back in the days when they didn't wear helmets and you didn't have as much padding, he says, players respected each other a lot more because if you were dropping your gloves and fighting, you were going to get bloodied. And at that point, there weren't that many teams. So if you bloodied somebody or you got bloodied, there's a pretty good chance you're going to see him next week and play again. So, but I do think that, you know, it's the attitude of the players and the off season conditioning, obviously, and the way that, you know, they don't have to work another job when they're not playing, you know, in the NHL, like a lot of the older players did. You know, I don't know how Gordie Howe did what he did, how he survived as long as he did. I think he was like, what, 78 when he finally retired or something like that. Well, maybe not that old, but you know what I mean?
I do. Jessie just tweeted out, and I absolutely love this tweet. She said, Jágr's lasted so long in the NHL because he doesn't have a wife that he can focus completely on hockey. That you know, and you brought up that point, too, about how the off season comes up. And you notice the players that are more of your longevity players, they really do work out all off season. They're not ones that really take very much time off.
Right.
So that was a great question, Alex. I really had to think on that one, especially which ones I found most impressive. Our next comment/question comes from Maggie. Maggie says, more of a comment than a question. I really do love the variety of hockey you cover. Well, we thank you very much for that. Your show is a gem. Well, thanks. She says, Jimmy, have you ever attended any of the pond tournaments that you've talked about on the show?
Well, thank you, Maggie. That was a very polite thing to say, or a very nice thing to say. And we kind of try to focus more on the whole aspect of hockey as opposed to just the NHL, because there's more to it than that. You know, these players all come from somewhere, and sometimes it's more fun to watch where they come from than you know, the actual finished product. So, and there's a lot of people that just don't make it. And that's where the pond hockey tournaments and the other tournaments that come up, you know, I mean, there's an IIHL tournament that's coming up now. I forget exactly where they're having it. I think it's over in France, where it's basically for people 40 and over. And, you know, I'll get more details on that for next week. But as far as actually going to these, I've been to a couple of games or parts of games, but what you have to remember is that usually, you know, if you're playing on frozen ice, that's on a lake, and it's probably going to be not very warm outside. So you get a lot of come and go people at those, unless they're the kind that, you know, are going to prop up and have a couple beers and watch the game. And you know, those people are fun to walk by. But for the most part, it's like, you know, you go down, you see the spectacle, you see the show, and then, you know, then it's time to go home because I need to warm up.
Right.
Or at least go sit in the car. So.
And turn the heat on.
But the spectacle itself is on some of these is pretty amazing. So.
Good to know. We don't have that kind of stuff here in Maryland, so I always liked hearing about, you know, the little extracurricular activities you guys have going on up there. And that was a great question too, Maggie. All right. Our next question comes from Blaine. And we kind of touched on this a little bit with the first question. It says, what is it about a head coaching change in the NHL that fires a team up? Last year, the Pens won the Cup after firing their coach. The Islanders are doing a lot better, and St. Louis looked on fire right after firing Hitchcock.
Well, St. Louis is 2-1, so I don't know if they're on fire, but the Islanders are like 6-2 or 7-2-1 now since 7-1-2 since they let their coach go.
Everybody.
Yep. Well, and they're in the like fourth place now in the wild card chase. Couple of points out in the East, so you know they're right there in the thick of it. Firing a coach it's one of those things that it's like pulling a goaltender. The team looks at it and goes in one of two directions. They either look at it as, you know, well, you know, that goaltender wasn't playing very well that night, so you know we're going to keep playing the way we're playing, and they just don't get any better. But most of the time, it's a sign of where they step their game up, and they go, you know, and they, you know, they say, okay, well, I obviously let my goaltender down, and so, you know, they had to pull him, so I must not be playing as well as I should be in front of him. And a lot of times when you fire a coach, that becomes the same mentality in the locker room, you know, whereas with the previous coach, they were, you know, maybe not necessarily treating him the way that they treated him previously, and they kind of stopped listening to him, and you know the expression of loss of locker room kind of a deal comes into play. But when it kind of changes, a lot of times changes the momentum of the team, because the team then stops and refocuses, and every player looks at themselves and wonders, you know, what did I do to get this coach fired? You know,
right.
Yeah, that's one aspect of it.
Yeah, I had the basically the same idea. It's kind of, and I wasn't going to use your terms at all, but it's kind of like it takes one piece of the puzzle to motivate a team. And perhaps maybe your players have outgrown the former coach's scheme a little bit, because, you know, hockey really does evolve year after year with how teams play. And what they model after. So, you know, sometimes it just takes a different head coach to fire a team up. It just, it's the change of atmosphere. You know, I hate to always go back to my team, but it happened last year. So, you know, it. Everybody said that, like all the videos and everything I listened to, said when Mike Sullivan came to Pittsburgh, the biggest difference between him and Mike Johnston was Sullivan wasn't like, okay, go out there and win. He would huddle up the team and tell them, go have fun. Remember what it was like to play when you were younger and it didn't count. So sometimes it just takes, you know, a different system, a different, how do I want to say this? It just takes a different way of motivating the team to get the best product out of them.
Well, and then sometimes, too, when you bring a new coach in, especially if you bring them in from outside, they don't have any of the preconceived notions, you know. And if they've been a head coach before and they're a decent head coach, they have the ability to go in there and say, you know, and call out the veterans and, you know, that get complacent and say, you know, if you're not playing, you're not playing. You know, if you don't give 100%, then guess what? You're only playing 50% of the time. So, and that's the way you get at, the players more than anything else. And I think that's another big part of the complacency of the coaches is they just get stuck in a rut and they stop managing the games. And like you said, they just throw the players out there and make them play, you know, as opposed to actually coaching them.
And they also, you know, in my opinion, they stop evolving. They stop, you know, trying to get better, trying different schemes, trying different lines, you know, different combinations on lines and things like that. And, I think that that's a big reason why some coaches are successful. And I love your point about bringing them in from either the outside or the inside. And I do think it makes a big difference. You know, I think if you bring somebody that's already familiar with the organization and the way the players play, I think it's a little easier transition. Whereas when you bring somebody in from the outside, you're learning somebody else's new scheme all over again. So it's kind of like having to start over where you should have been in preseason.
Well, right. And, you and I bring in our own teams in it because we're – well, first of all, they're two really good teams, and then they're the ones we watch the most. But, I mean, if you look at Boudreaux, you know, he doesn't care, you know. I mean, Zach Parise was down on the third line for a while. You know, they'll put it's the third checking line, by the way, because we have four checking lines in Minnesota. We don't have a first line, second line, fourth line. We have four checking lines, and they're all determined. And I don't know. It's just goofy. But he doesn't care. He'll mix and match players and put people in different situations without care. You know, he doesn't, you know, whereas, you know, when the previous coach was here, he was, I think, kind of afraid of the veterans. And so he just figured that he had to play them all the time. And Boudreaux's not that way because he's like, well, you know, I've been doing this longer than you have, kid. I know you're a superstar and I know you're making $10 million a year, but, you know, I'll still be here when you're gone, you know. So that's kind of his philosophy, and that's, you know, that's the older coach's philosophy, and I think that's a lot of times what happens in these changes too.
That's a great point. And Blaine, that was a great question. Because it works for some teams and it doesn't for others. So, you know, it's kind of a balance situation there, and sometimes it's a little up too. But, thank you again, Blaine, for listening and for the question. We are actually going to take a quick commercial break here, and then we will be back to answer our final mailbag question, and then we're going to get into our top 10 list for Valentine's week. We'll be right back, guys.
Big Worm Customs is a company that does it all, from design services to home improvements to vehicle customization, all at great prices and payment options. Call now for your free estimate, 248-595-6618, 248-595-6618, or online at facebook.com/bigwormcup.
Detroit Rock City Promotions, everything you need for your party, wedding, show, or event. DJ services, tent setup, table and chairs, mobile stages, sound and lighting, photography, on-staff reverend. Book DRCP Army today at 810-627-9773. That number again is 810-627-9773. Or find us on the web at DetroitRockCityPromotions.com.
All right, we are back. Again, if you want to call in and join any of our discussion, talk anything hockey related, our number is 646-668-8467. So we're going to get into our very last question that we got this week, and that one comes from Jamie. And Jamie wants to know which college game or games surprised you the most this week. Were there any big upsets? Well, I will tell you, Jamie, that I actually watched the Cornell versus Union. And if you remember, we were talking last week, Union went into last weekend ranked number 4. And it was a really, really good game. And you would Cornell's unranked, so you would have assumed that Union would have won the game. They didn't. They lost on 2 back-to-back very bad penalties. They got frustrated. You could definitely see it in the players' faces. And they got a hooking call and a tripping call, I believe. Not necessarily in that order because I can't remember which one happened first. But the game was tied 3-3. And this was in the third period, of course, and Cornell scored on their first power play. And then when the second penalty was committed, Cornell scored on that one. So the final score ended up being Cornell 5, Union 3. And it was a very, very good hockey game. Cornell was actually up late in the second period. I believe it was 3-2 at that point. And Union scored a goal midway through the third period to tie it up. And then, like I said, the back-to-back penalties happened and gave Cornell the 2 points. So they ended up winning. And it was just, it was such a great game to watch. So what about you, Jimmy?
Well, you know, and on that Cornell game, too, well, they were ranked. I mean, they were just – it was really low. I think they were 17 or 18
was
or
it?
Whatever. But based on that performance and some of the other ones that they had over the weekend, they ended up – they're ranked number 12 now. So
that's crazy.
You know, what looked like more of an upset at the time kind of isn't now. But,
right.
You know, I look at – and, you know, I've been talking about this for, I don't know, probably blue in the face – about Penn State, you know, and how they came into Minnesota and, you know, Minnesota beat them 5-1, 5-2. So it wasn't even close.
I watched that game too.
So it really, oh, wow, just scored. 3-3. Okay. Sorry, I have a lot horn on
yes,
my phone.
Yes, we not only do our shows, we also watch our hockey games during the show.
Right. Well, exactly. So, But anyway, you know, Penn State now has lost 5 straight games, and they've been playing against, you know, better teams. So, and they have another challenge coming up because they're playing against Wisconsin coming up. And
right.
Wisconsin's won 3 straight games against teams ranked in the top 10. And, you know, they went from nothing. Now I think they're 17. So, and Penn State's got to go into the Kohl Center in Madison and play a really hot Wisconsin team. So, I don't think things are getting better for Penn State. I don't know if they will pull it out when they get there or not. But you
right.
know, The team that's surprising me the most and the team I'm having the most fun with is Air Force.
Oh, yes. Aren't they doing so well? They're ranked 20th. I'm so excited.
Well, and they're 17th in the pairwise, and they're the Atlantic. Nobody ever makes it in from the Atlantic on the pairwise. They, you know, they get one team and that's it. So, you know,
because that team usually has to win their division.
Yep. You know, that's one of the, it's not one of the major conferences. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. They don't really have a very tough schedule, coming through the rest of the year. So, I mean, there's a good chance they could win out. And if they win out, I think they're in regardless. And I think that'll be fun to have Air Force in the tournament. I mean, they come in, usually, because they win the conference or whatever, you know, they've done that, I think, you know, 4 out of the last 10 years or 5 out of the last 10 years or what have you. So that's how they get in, but it would be kind of nifty to have, you know, maybe both them and Army I think that would be a lot of fun.
That definitely would. You know, I'm looking forward to it. You know, as a former Air Force life myself, I kind of pull for them because it's like, yeah, go Air Force. And I was very excited to see that they cracked the top 20 in the NCAA rankings. And like you said, they're 17 in the pairwise. So this could be interesting. And, you know, just to I know we've talked about it many, many times, but we have new listeners every week. And so if you're not familiar with college hockey, the pairwise rankings, if you look those up, you'll see underneath number 16 that there's a red line. Basically, it's like Jimmy said, if you're in the top 16, you're more than likely going to make the tournament unless you don't win your division, like he just said, with Air Force and the Atlantic. Normally, you know, because of the Atlantic division doesn't have the powerhouse teams like North Dakota or Wisconsin or Minnesota Duluth or Minnesota, you know, because the Atlantic division is just, you know, a different type of hockey division. And, you know, they don't always just make the tournament. They usually have to win their division in order to make the tournament that comes up in March. Did I explain that right, Jimmy?
Yes, you did. You're learning. I'm very impressed.
I am.
Yeah, and there's another conference that's that way too. Is the WCHA and Bemidji State and Michigan Tech have been flirting with being in that, you know, top 16, and those are the two best teams probably in the WCHA. So chances are that, you know, they'll get a regular bid from, you know, winning the conference tournament, and that'll be the only one they get. So usually you have to count on being in the, you know, because only 16 teams make it into the NCAA tournaments, or the dances, as we like to call it, just because that's what the basketball people do. But in order to get in, you know, 16 teams get in, and there's 6 conferences. So with two of them not being as strong and not usually having people in. And then a lot of times you'll get an upset. You know, there's nothing to say that a team that's not ranked or not in the right spot, you know, can't make it in. I mean, that's happened a couple times in the Big Ten Conference. You know, that almost always happens now in the NCHC, that the team that's supposed to win it never wins it, you know. So, because there's so much parity in there. And, you know, you look at teams like St. Cloud State and even Omaha, they're good teams in that conference. They're just, you know, not as good as Duluth and Denver and North Dakota, and they can't, you know, they just keep getting beat down and beat down and beat down, you know. I think St. Cloud has a losing record overall, but I think they have, you know, like the second or third best as far as strength of schedule. So, you know, they're not playing, you know, bad teams, playing really good teams. So
right.
Even in their non-conference, they play really good teams just because of the legacy of that team. You know, they're not afraid to play Minnesota. They're not afraid to play Wisconsin, you know, when they get outside of, you know, their own, you know, when they're playing their non-conference games. So
Right. Yeah.
They're a lot better than you think they are.
Right. And you, just to kind of, you know, bring in our new viewers who may not be familiar with our new listeners, not viewers. Thank goodness I'm on the radio. to bring you guys kind of, you know, we've talked about this throughout all our episodes and whatnot. But one of the things about the college hockey is, and I had to learn this myself because, you know, I'm not as familiar with it as Jimmy is. But when you're in the East Coast, like, you know, Air Force and like Cornell and Union, you only play one time each weekend. Whereas when you look at the divisions that Minnesota's in and North Dakota, you play two games a weekend. So it's, you know, it's really unique to watch the different areas play. Mm-hmm.
Well, because the Western Conference, you know, the more Western teams, so to speak, play back to backs because of travel. You know, I mean, right. You're not going to go to Alaska Anchorage for one game. You're going
right,
to go
like
for
Minnesota
two.
Did this weekend.
Right, exactly. You're going to go for two games, so it's different. You know, when you have. You know, when your travel time is by bus and it takes, you know, 12 minutes, you know, because you're playing your crosstown rival, you know, like they're doing in the Beanpot, you know. So,
right.
Which sets up really nicely Monday,
exactly.
If you get a chance and you can get to the Northeastern Sports Network. And I think it's streaming a couple other places. But Beanpot this year, first time Harvard and Boston University has played since like 1998, and Boston is rated number 3, and Harvard is rated number 4 in the country right now as far as the U.S. College Hockey Online poll goes. So that's going to be a heck of a game. That's if you get a chance to watch a college hockey game this weekend, including Monday and the weekend, that's the one to watch.
Right. Yeah, and I was surprised that NHL on NBC, because I watched Monday's rival game, and they actually, after the game was over on Monday night, they actually went and showed highlights of the Beanpot tournament. So even if you miss it and you can't stream it or can't find it, et cetera, watch NBCSP, because like I said, after the big game on Monday night, the NHL game, they actually showed the highlights. So I was able to catch up on that by just watching those highlights. They spent a good half hour on it too, which was, it was nice because, you know, not many networks do that.
Well, it's been going on since 1952, I think it was.
52,
so
yes.
it's yeah, and it's, you know, four teams from Boston. And usually they get pretty good results. And this year they can't be even. They have to be just as pleased as they could be, you know, with the results that they have. So, and it's
right.
They kind of just throw the names in the hat and they pull them out as to who gets to play, you know, for each, you know, in the first two games, and then, you know, the winner then plays. But yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, that's probably on my bucket list that I'd like to go out there. The only problem with that is they're, you know, they play, like they played last Monday, and they turn around and play the following Monday. So, meanwhile, in between that, Harvard plays Union. So
yes.
They're not going to have an easy weekend because Harvard plays Union on Friday.
Right.
Harvard's 4 and Union 6 still. So, I mean, that's not going to be easy.
Right. Yep. And then, you know, speaking of tournaments, and I want to bring this up because I know we do have a lot of female listeners. This week is the NWHL All-Star Game, and it is on Saturday and Sunday. But that's, if you're not familiar with that, the teams this year are Team Kessel, which you'll probably recognize Amanda Kessel. Her brother, Phil Kessel, is the Stanley Cup champion. And then we have Team Kelly Stedman. and these are this is the women's all-star game. The tickets are actually sold out, I was reading earlier this week. They're doing a clinic on Saturday, and then they're doing an NWHL skill showdown at 4 o'clock on Saturday. And then the actual all-star game is at 3 o'clock on Sunday. So I don't know if it'll be able to be streamed or not, but I'm going to try to look for it because I think it's going to be very interesting to watch. So I did want to just give a shout-out to the NWHL.
Well, and for those of us that follow all the brands of hockey, Phil Kessel is Amanda Kessel's brother. Amanda Kessel's probably the best player in the world in hockey. And I don't think you can say that about Phil. He just happens to play in the
right.
NHL.
Exactly.
Because she's just amazing. And, you know, and like I always say, if you get a chance to watch women's hockey, you need the pro level. I mean, the pro league is just so fledgling right now. They only have four teams, but they're going to look to expand. You know, the NHL only started with six, remember? And how many years did they do that with only six? It was, what, 67, Kimmy?
Right.
Because they're on the 50s.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. You know, they went that long with just six teams. So, but they're looking right now to expand, and they're looking at markets, and they're looking at Pittsburgh. You know, obviously they're looking at Minnesota. And they're trying to look at places where hockey's important, and they can start to draw. So, and you know, and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And you know, quite frankly, a lot of the girls that play, you know, around here would like to play pro hockey, and just
right.
hadn't really been an option for them. So now that it will be, it'll make things even more interesting. So,
right, definitely.
And
definitely.
Speaking of women's hockey,
yeah.
we happen to have a pretty good women's hockey team matchup coming on this weekend. We have number one
Wisconsin. That is Wisconsin, isn't it?
Yep, which is always, you know, which is the number one team and just keeps blowing
right.
people away and rarely loses, playing against number two Duluth.
Minnesota Duluth, yes.
Wouldn't
yes. that be great
so,
if that was an upset? I mean, seriously. Wisconsin
well,
26-2-1.
It would not surprise me if Duluth goes in and gets, you know, if they don't split, you know, because, I can't remember the coach's name for Duluth. Deb was talking about her. She's used to be assistant coach at Harvard. And, now she's the head coach there, and Duluth used to have a really, really solid program. Well, you know, probably one of the best. And then, oh, doggone it, Wild lost in overtime. Well, at least we got a point. Anyway, a really solid program, and they did really well recruiting. And they lost the coach that they had, and now that they picked up this new gal, she's really, really good. So now it's back to, you know, Minnesota, Duluth, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and, you know, pack a lunch for the rest of you. So, and like I said, you know, those three teams have won every national championship but one.
Right. And that is
so
crazy.
So when they meet for a weekend series, you're literally watching the best of women's college hockey.
Yes. Yes. I can never, you always tell me it's on, and I can never find streaming information for it. And I get so irritated because they don't show that on my alternative sports network. So I always have to rely on Jimmy to say, like, okay, check out these highlights and things like that. So, but I'm very jealous that you get that game. But, yeah, so to... The women's, like Jimmy was saying, the women's conference really hasn't changed in the rankings. We have Wisconsin, Minnesota, Duluth. Actually, St. Lawrence moved up from 5-3. Clarkson moved down from 3-4. Minnesota moved down from 4-5. Boston College stayed at 6. Cornell, 7. Robert Morris, 8. And then Quinnipiac moved up to 9th and Princeton down to 10th.
Now, you mentioned Robert Morris. Now, I can't remember her name. Who's the other all-star coach for the women?
Kelly Stedman.
Yep. She plays for one of the teams. Well, she's also the director of women's college hockey at Robert Morris. So she's, like, doing so many things all at the same time. That's just nothing but hockey-related. So to her, for being able to balance that.
Right, no doubt. No doubt. And then on the men's side, we have Minnesota Duluth is still number one. Denver's still number two. Number three is Boston University. Number four is Harvard, who moved up from five. Minnesota moved up from seventh to fifth. Union dropped from fourth to sixth. Boston College moved up one to seventh. Western Michigan moved up one to eighth. UMass Lowell moved up from 10th to 9th, and then Penn State dropped from 6th to 10th. And then we have
Providence.
Yeah, like I said
before, Penn State drop didn't really surprise me. There are some interesting matchups. Be interested to see how Clarkson and Quinnipiac go, because that's going to determine a lot. And you've got some of your other, you got your Wisconsins, and you've got, St. Lawrence and all those kind of people, teams or whatever, as far as whether or not they're going to be able to maintain what they're able to do and how that's going to affect, whether Air Force is able to jump up or not.
Right. Yeah. So it should be some good matchups this weekend. But you know what? We're going to go ahead and take our next commercial break, and then we're going to jump into it.
Before we do that, one other matchup we should actually talk about that I forgot to bring up is Colorado College and Denver are playing for the Golden Shovel this weekend.
Forgot about that tournament.
Yeah, they're having it's a home and home, and if they tie, then it's total goals. So it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of like the other one where, was it Colorado College and Air Force played?
Yeah, that one, I forget what that one's called. And then next weekend we have the Alaska Fairbanks and Alaska Anchorage playing for the Governor's Cup. There's a lot of little hidden trophies and stuff that happen in college hockey too, just like in college football and college basketball, so. Just,
right.
A lot of you just don't know about it, and, some I don't even know about, so.
But if we don't know, we try to find out.
Exactly. That should be fun because Colorado Springs, which is also where Air Force is from, where Air Force Academy is at, but Colorado Springs is where Colorado College is, and Denver,
right.
I think it's like 70 minutes from one place to the next. So it becomes an interesting rivalry weekend, and it's one of those things that I guess it'd be fun to go see because you throw the records out the door and they just go out and they play. So.
Yep. Very true. And those are sometimes the most fun games to watch too.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to go ahead and take our last set of commercial breaks here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to do our top tens because, believe it or not, we only have 30 minutes left. That's crazy.
Okay. Right.
So, again, if you guys want to call in and join the discussion with our top 10, 646-668-8467. We'll be right back.
Bob's Big Ben Bowling. Stop by for some awesome food and bowling fun at Bob's Big Ben Bowling, located at 119 East Main Avenue, Ritzville, Washington. Or call ahead to reserve your lanes today at 509-659-0540. Open Monday through Fridays, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. That's Bob's Big Ben Bowling.
DRCP Wicked Division is an independent horrorcore label with locations in Michigan and Ohio. Available now, Mindbomb by Carnage, and look for Welcome to the Dark Side by Carnage in the summer of 2017, along with Young Justice debut album. Find The Wickedness at DetroitRockCityPromotions.com or on Facebook at DRCP Wicked Division.
Alright guys, we are back. So, as promised, for a little bit of fun, and because the ladies out there that listen to us asked me personally to do a top 10 hottest, so we're going to do it as our Valentine's special. So, Jimmy's very lucky that I didn't give him the top 10 hottest hockey players. I think it would have been a little bit more fun to hear his list.
I would have had Yager fans. When you get to be old, like well, he's actually still younger than me, but, you know, when you get to be older, you know, you're not a hunk or you're not cute or whatever. You become handsome.
Exactly. And just not to leave the guys out of this, Jimmy is actually doing the 10 hardest hitters. Now, I don't know whether he decided to combine all-time and current. I know nothing of his list, just like he knows nothing of mine. So we are actually going to go back and forth on this. So this should be a lot of fun. So I do have to do a huge shout-out because without the ladies of the NHL Facebook group, I would not have been able to compile such a great list. So I just wanted to give them a huge shout-out. If you're a female hockey fan, it is a strictly female-only group. The ladies are great in there, so feel free to join that group. They are amazing. So,
they won't let
me
in.
I guess. Yeah, they won't let Jimmy in. But, hey. So, I guess you want me to start?
Sure.
Okay. So, for my top 10 hottest hockey players, I'll do the currents first, and then Jimmy and I'll do the back and forth on that one. At the very end of our list, I'll tell you who the ladies picked as the top 10 all-time hottest. And these are former players, not anybody that's currently playing. So for the top 10 current hockey players that are the hottest, according to numerous polls that I have done and my own list, number 10 is Chris Letang from the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, and, you know, he was featured on Hunks of Hockey a couple of months ago. So what about your number 10, Jimmy?
Are we doing all time?
No, I thought we were doing current.
Okay. Well, I don't really have a top 10 current. I thought we were just doing all time. But
well, you have your top 10 list. So.
Right. Well, you know, I have the ones that, you know, that the people had, you know, and one of the ones they had was Ovechkin. And I can definitely see that, you know, people think of him more as a scorer because, I mean, he can light the lamp like nobody else, like nobody's business.
Right.
Without any help, he can just do it. You know, he doesn't need any assist or whatever, but he's not afraid to go into the corner. You know, when you get hit by Ovechkin, he's not a small, tiny little guy. And he, you know, when he hits you, you know you've been hit. So, you know, I can definitely see why, you know, people voted for Ovechkin.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And that was a really good one, too, because many people look at Ovechkin and he's like, okay, he's a hard hitter when he hits the puck, but nobody really thinks of him board checking either. So that was a good one, Jimmy. So my number 9 is Tyler Seguin from the Stars. I think every Star fan that I know loves Tyler.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to be very good at commenting on good-looking guys.
I know, it's so hard. So who's your number 9?
Well, like I said, my list is more all-time than just now.
No, that's fine.
But, I mean, some of them are playing right now, like Cal Clutterbuck. He's not – he doesn't necessarily hit the hardest of anybody. He just hits all the time. He just – you know, oh, here's a chance. I can check this person. I got a chance to, you know, here. Okay, well, you know, I got, we're supposed to get out the ice. Well, let me hit this guy before we get out the ice. You know, that's Cal Clutterbuck. I mean, that's how he's been. That's how he was back with the Gophers, back when I watched him then. Just the sheer volume of checks that he has makes him, you know, one of the, you know, puts him in my top 10. Just, you know, he doesn't necessarily hit the hardest, but he's that, you know, what's the bunny thing with the drum, Kimmy? Yeah, he keeps going.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or the old Timex watch where it takes a licking and keeps on ticking. He just keeps going and going and going and going. And,
right.
It seems like every shift he's out there, he's hitting somebody like two or three times. So, you know, so that's why Clutterbuck would be my number 9 of all time.
That. All right. Number 8 is Jonathan Toews from the Chicago Blackhawks. I know that makes your night, Jimmy, because it's a Blackhawk. No, I'm kidding. But, yeah, he came in at number 8. And ironically enough, when I pulled this question, he was actually number 8 on that list, and I really did agree with that. So your next one? I feel like I should give you a drum roll.
Are you bright? Well, my next one is Wendell Clark. And he goes back a little ways. But he played on, he played for Toronto. And the teams back then for Toronto were so bad that fans would actually show up just to watch Wendell Clark hit somebody. And the players on the other team were like, I hope he's not in a bad mood. Let me not make him mad, because he would run you into the boards and then run you back into the boards. And, he was one of the ones that would hit you more than once. He'd hit you, you'd get up, and then he'd hit you again. So, he was the draw for Toronto for a long period of time.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about him. But that's a good pick. That's a really good pick. And then, after we finish our list, I have a couple of people that have already added to your list. They haven't added to mine, so I guess I'm going well. My number 7 is TJ Oshie from the Washington Capitals. And I picked him not only because he's adorable and gorgeous looking, he also can play hockey. That was a big thing for me. So, what about your number 7, Jimmy?
Well, TJ Oshie, not a, he can play hockey, and he played hockey at a high level at North Dakota too. So,
right.
You know,
and rest in peace, water bottle from Sunday.
Exactly.
He knocked the cap off that. That was just a, oh wow, that was a heck of a hit.
Well, my next one is Dennis Potvin. He was the capital of the Islanders when they won 4 straight cups back in the 80s. And he was that guy on the blue line that would just – it would look like it was going to be a normal play, and then he would just lay somebody out in the center of the ice. He was not – you know, he didn't do it that often, but when he did it, it was timely. You know, it would be like, okay, they're coming in on a 3-on-2 or 2-on-1 or whatever, and – and he just knocked one of the guys out. So, you know,
nice.
That's how they won so many. That's how they won the cups. He could score too, but he was that sneaky guy, that lurking guy on the blue line. And the teams that played the Islanders on a regular basis, the East Coast teams, knew about him, and they were kind of apprehensive as to, you know, where is he? Where is he lurking? What is he doing? Because he would just come up and just hit you. You know, if you had the puck on your stick, it was legal for him to hit you. And he took that to the extreme.
Wow. That was just a little bit before my time.
Yeah, just a little. Whatever.
Number 6, Jimmy, is your favorite. Number 6 is Jaromír Jágr. I had to put him in because even when he first came into the league, I thought he was absolutely gorgeous. As he's gotten older, he's gotten so much better looking. So that's why he made my number six.
Well, us guys get, you know, get handsome as we get old. Older.
Older.
So my next is Nicholas Cronwell. Croner was, you know, you got Cronwalled. And he was, I mean, he would hit you and you stayed hit. And there were so many times that, you know, he's probably still known as one of the better defensemen. And he came in at a time when, you know, I think Lindstrom was the big Swede for them. And he came in and he had him to look up to. But Cronwell just came in and just like, okay, well, you know, there you are, I'm going to hit you. And he disrupted so many plays and did so many things differently than a lot of players did. And more, I think he still kind of does, but, you know, he's kind of in twilight. But you still don't want to get Cronwalled.
Right, right. That's a really good pick. All right, so we're halfway through. Number five, and I tried to stay away from my own team because, you know, that's who I watch. But the girls and all the groups that I polled, number five is Sidney Crosby. And, you know, when he came into the NHL, he was known as a pretty boy. So he still has those good looks. So we put Sidney Crosby at number five.
Sid's probably not going to make my list. just saying.
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. We had this conversation earlier, but I won't say what you said. So.
That's right. I said we were going for hard hitters, not finesse players.
Yeah. Well, you didn't really say it that way, but we'll go with that. So my next one is actually Tim Horton.
Mm.
Not the coffee and donuts guy. Well, he went on to that. And not because
right.
of the coffee and donuts. But back in the 50s, he was known as the fiercest and the strongest and the toughest defender for Toronto. And then he retired. And then he did the coffee and donut thing. And, well, to be honest, the real reason he's on my list is because he was such a hard hitter and now he sells coffee and donuts. So it's
which
it's,
could give
it's
you that
amazing.
Morning punt.
Yeah, exactly. So
oh, great,
you know,
great analogy.
Well, and if he if I go in there and I'm not happy with my service, you know, I'm not going to say anything because he's going to run me into the sidewall or into the boards or whatever. So
or he might come out of a coffee machine like Brett Burns did.
Right. Well, he played before, you know, Bobby Orr did. So that was back when defensemen didn't really play any offense. They just hit the forwards when they came across the line. And he was
right.
really, really good at that. So,
nice.
You know, I know a lot of people that are listening right now go to Tim Hortons to get coffee and donuts, but take a time to look at, you know, and he was a Toronto guy and he was a really good defenseman. So take a look at, you know, where you're getting your coffee and donuts from and, you know, be a little more cautious the next time you get coffee and you don't like the way it tastes and you complain. So.
Exactly. All right. So number four on my list, and this one was number two on everybody else's list for, like, the girls that I polled. But my number four is Ryan Kessler from the Anaheim Ducks. And let me tell you, when I posed this question, I got a lot of Ryan Kessler photos, and I'm like, ooh, I didn't know he looked that good. So who's your number four?
Well, I'm going to go with Rob Blake. Played most of his career with the Kings. But I mean, he was big. He was big. He was strong. He knew every trick in the book. He invented a couple other one of which was basically the butt check, where the forward would come in with the puck and think he could get behind Blake with the puck along the boards, and Blake would just basically just turn around and back skate into him, hit him with his you know, back end, and put him into the boards that way and trap him in the glass, and the puck would just roll free and the other defenseman would come and pick it up. So, you know, he was more original than just hitting hard, because it just wasn't expected. I mean, there were times. I mean, he could run you into the boards like anybody else, you know, with a, you know, shoulder check or, you know, a hip check or whatever. But he would literally turn around and back skate into the forward and knock the puck off his stick that way. And so, I mean, he was very entertaining to watch.
That's a good pick too. It's definitely a good pick. All right. So let's see. Number three, Connor Sheary from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Again, this was not just my pick. I actually did really use the polls that I did. And Connor Sheary is an up-and-coming, you know, hockey player. Again, he's on the smaller side. He's more of a finesse player, so you won't find him on Jimmy's list at all. But, yeah, I was very shocked that, you know, so many people voted for him. And I didn't even write him in. So, but that was really, I thought was a really good pick. So I had to put that up there. So who's your number three?
I got Eric Lindros. The E train.
Ooh, that's a really good pick.
Oh, you know, you're a little younger, but to watch him sometimes, you know how when you do the dump and chase, and Lindros would do the dump and chase, and he'd come in and he hit the defenseman, and he was so big and so strong and so agile that he would hit the defenseman, and the defenseman would literally disappear.
Right.
And it was like, wow, I hope he's coming out of there. I hope he didn't just like dissolve or whatever. And,
exactly.
You know, they came out of there on their knees usually.
Right.
But he hit so many people so hard that, he was just strength and size. You know, he came around when the league started to get bigger. And
right.
He was still bigger than the biggest. And what's the word? Behemoth. That's what they always called them, the behemoth of the league. And but he would hit people, and they stayed hit.
Yep, you're exactly right. So number two on my list was Matt Cullen. Again, you had mentioned how, you know, how he got older, and he's handsome, as your word. But, Matt Cullen made the list, and a lot of the people that I polled said that his biggest trait was his eyes. Everybody loved his eyes. So you're number two.
my number two is Darius Kasparaitis.
That's a good one, because David had asked about that. Had sent a message and said that was the guy that ended Eric Lindros' career.
Yep. And, well, his biggest thing was the hip check. I mean, he didn't invent the hip check, but he basically perfected it. And if you go back and look at some of the old hockey reels of him, he would literally hip check you when you're crossing the line with the puck. You'd look down at the puck, and then he'd hit you, and then you'd go over, you know, skates overhead and land on the ice, you know, and then basically it's just like pummel into the boards. Well, he picked the puck and went the other way. So
right.
That's why he's my number two.
Yeah, I like that. And like I said, we actually had a couple people tweet and message on while we were on air about him. So number one, and this pains me to say this, but he truly is very, very good looking. My number one is Henrik Lundqvist from the Rangers. And he is just, he's got that classic, handsome, gorgeous eyes look. He's like the all-around package for NHL current players. So that's my number one. I can't wait to hear your number one.
Well, he's a Swede, right? So, I mean, all Swedes are good looking. So.
It's very true. Very true.
Well, I think my number one's a kind of a no-brainer. Right now he's the Wild assistant coach. He works with the defense, and it's Scott Stevens. Nobody hit like Scott Stevens. Nobody has ever hit like Scott Stevens, and probably nobody ever will hit like Scott Stevens. And he's clear, far and away. And if you ask anybody that ever played against him, they're like, I'm really happy, when he didn't hit me.
Right.
Because he didn't care. He just went after everybody. And,
right.
You're carrying the puck in my zone? Okay, well, then you're mine. And, his attitude more than anything else, I mean, he's a big guy, but his attitude more than anything else was what made him what he was. And he kind of set a different precedent for somebody that was able to score on defense and actually be able to hit too at the same time. So that's what made Scott Stevens so good.
And that is an excellent choice for number one. Real quickly, we have a caller on the line, so I want to get to them. The top 10 former players that the ladies came up with. Number 10 is Chris Osgood. Number 9 is Nicholas Lindstrom. Number 8 was Mario Lemieux. Number 7 was Jeremy Roenick. Number 6 was Martin Brodeur. Number 5 was Martin Saint-Louis. Number 4 was Peter Forsberg. Number 3 was Georges Perez. Number 2 is Timo Solani, if I can get that out. And number 1, all-time former player, was Patrick Waugh. So those were some great choices. I got a lot of help from the ladies out there. And Jimmy had some help from some of the ladies and men. But that was an excellent list. So we're going to go ahead and take our caller real quick here, Jimmy. Hi, you're on the air with Kim and Jimmy.
Hey, you two. It's Lou from Jersey.
Hey, Lou. How are you?
All right. I got caught up on another show the last couple of weeks, and, a little conflict in timing, so that's why I haven't been able to call.
Oh, well, we've
missed
you.
I didn't think you were mad at us, Lou.
No. It's because of my late show starts at 10:30, and I had to get to that, immediately, because that's like my main nighttime show. We're on like six nights a week.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, we're glad to have you back here calling in and talking to us. And glad that, it was nothing major that kept you away, and that, like Jimmy said, you weren't mad at us.
No, it was conflict of interest.
No, that's fine. We completely understand that.
Yeah. But what I understand is what's wrong with Colorado. Oof. I mean, this is pathetic.
Yeah.
I mean, 32 points in February?
Yeah. Have you seen the meme that's been going around about, like, the contenders, the pretenders, and then you have the Colorado Avalanche in their own category at the very bottom of the pyramid?
Yeah, an Avalanche itself.
Yes.
They're pointless one.
They are struggling. And, of course, that makes me nervous, too, because my team actually goes and plays them tomorrow night. So I don't want it to be one of those trap upset games.
If you look at Colorado, though, they're not one of those teams that has gotten, fat on overtime ties, where they've, they're getting this. They've only had two overtime losses where they've gotten points. But also, they're not very good. They don't have.
Yeah.
They have a new head coach, and he's struggling, and they don't have that many good players. They have a lot of good players in their farm system, and they'll be sitting on the number one or number two draft pick this year. So they will get better in a hurry. And it's like I said before, Lou. It's the two schools of thought. You can you can try to get better by improving your team by buying free agents, or you can just be, you know, horribly bad and get the best player. And that's pretty much what Colorado's going to do. They're going to get, you know, they'll get one of the three top players in this draft, and, you know, they'll get better.
Yeah. Now, what I also want to comment on is, you know, that the Islanders are having trouble with the Barclays Center, and they may be forced to move. Now, I've heard of one of two cases that one is they may be moving to Quebec, which is a distinct possibility because they have an arena in place. However, the governor of Connecticut wants to bring the team over there to, I think, Hartford.
Right. Well, the third option is that going back to Nassau, and the thing with that is they're trying to get the funding in place where they can actually, you know, improve the arena where they need it improved. The Hartford idea is decent because you know, the government has put up $125 million in the budget to make that arena back where it was. But the Quebec idea, I don't see that happening because I see them getting an expansion team here because the NHL wants to expand another team to even it out. So I think they will get one, and I think that Seattle will get one, and I think that Toronto will get another team. So just because those are hot sports markets.
What would you call them if they move? I mean, you can't call them the Connecticut Islanders or whatever. What would you call them?
Well, I don't think they'll move to Connecticut. I think the Connecticut, if they keep on this pace of, you know, I think the Islanders are moving back to the island. I think now they're playing decent hockey right now. Hmm?
Even though the Nassau Coliseum was gone.
Right. Well, I think that the option is that they're going to expand that, and they'll stay at they have a contract to stay at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So, you know, they don't have to do it that fast.
Well, actually, there's an opt-out clause that came in with that they didn't know about, and they can leave either next year or 2019.
Right.
They can leave, but they can't be kicked out.
Right.
Ah.
And, you know, I'm going to interrupt just here for a minute. If we do go over, the show will air in its entirety on its podcast and also on Arena Sports Network. So I'm not going to cut Lou off at all. So
my fault.
If we go over, then it'll be on our podcast. So don't think that we're just, like, cutting off air here. So, you know, you were talking about the move with the Islanders. The Coyotes have been rumored to be looking at other areas as well. I've heard Seattle.
Yeah, but
and
Tempe, Arizona, the university backed out.
Ah, okay.
Right, so they're looking at maybe going to Tempe or one of the other cities. So, because they don't have any options. As many options in Phoenix. The other thing they're looking at doing is getting the city to build a new multi-purpose stadium, which I'm against for both them and the Suns, which it's ridiculous, especially down in Phoenix, to try to have a stadium where you don't have ice the whole time.
Yeah. Well, hey, what about L.A.? They don't have ice all the time either. In Florida, they don't have any ice at all.
No, but who else plays in the arena that Florida plays in?
I was thinking Tampa Bay, but that's another city. But I get. But it's, you know, a climate where they don't have any ice at all. I mean, that's going to get kind of hard.
Right.
Well, I mean, you look at some of the arenas that, and we'll discuss this more probably in the off season. But you look at some of the arenas that have that share. That share the arena with the NBA team, you know,
right.
They typically have the worst ice because you know, the ice is closed, you know, and they put, you know, boards up over it or whatever, put the NBA stuff over the top of it, you know, whereas you look at, you know, I mean, even Chicago with the United Center, it's like, you know, or LA with the with Staples, it's like you lose a lot when you don't have open ice and the ice can't breathe. So when you try to flood it and you try to do this, you know, you're just not going to get the same consistency of ice where you do in an arena where you can have ice the whole time. And, you know, and I get that. I understand that because the arenas typically in the NHL are not owned by the NHL teams. Like the football, football basically runs their own stadium.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen in the NHL.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, talking about the Islanders and, you know, potential moves and stuff, it would be really heartbreaking for them to leave New York because they've been there for so long. And, you know, I know I have an Islanders fan on Facebook that he said that if they move, he would just be devastated because it's just, it's a legacy that they have.
Right.
But I think if they moved to Hartford or somewhere else, that it would be a lot for, you know, their diehard fans to take at first.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the move will do them better too. But they're not looking bad now.
it's been hard for them to, especially to let the island and are not playing in Brooklyn is really hard. I mean, that's why they're not drawn. You know, Brooklyn, the Barclays Center is terrible for,
yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. sidelines are terrible for hockey. And like I said, there again, once again, you have a basketball arena that you're trying to put ice on. And so you never get good ice. So your games are sloppy and, you know, and slushy. And, I don't know. I just think every team should be smart enough to get their own arena.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really hard to share. I mean, I guess the Capitals do okay because they share with the basketball team, the Wizards.
Yeah.
Who they were.
Yeah,
but
Washington has terrible ice.
Right.
they're up there in the top 10 terrible ice. So.
If anybody's got a problem, it should be the Staples Center.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's like the worst.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
Because you guys share that with three teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The Fakers, the Cut-Ups, and the Queens.
Well, you know, here in Minnesota at Excel, I mean, they have to share the arena with the high school hockey team. Finally, you know, high school hockey.
And the toilet bowls.
They have to share it with the college hockey teams that come in. They have to share it with the ice capades. Oh wait, that's all ice, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah. You forgot about the toilet bowls.
Yeah, it is. Don't rub it in.
the Timberwolves all play it. The Timberwolves play over at Target Center.
Yeah.
They have their own arena.
Oh, they do. Okay.
So
lucky them.
They, well, I mean, it was set up that way. You know, I guess we understand cold better than most people.
Yes. Well, that's your middle name, right? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, well, we're going to get some big snow tomorrow, so,
lucky you.
No, thank you.
Look, I have been waiting all winter long for snow, and it was 70 degrees today.
I'd rather have that.
Yeah, you could have it. I'll trade you places. But we are expected to get somewhere between 1 and 5 inches, depending on what weathercast you listen to out here overnight tonight. So.
Well, we're expected to get 6 to 10.
Ugh, see, I'm super jealous.
You want some? We can give you some.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great.
I'll haul the truck in the morning.
All right, sounds good. Just 4 hours south.
Mm.
Yep. Well, Lou, we really appreciate you calling in and talking with us. We actually have missed you. Jimmy and I have talked, and said, you know, I wonder if Lou's okay, because we hadn't heard from you in a couple of weeks. So we're glad to hear everything is great.
Due to conflicts, you know, because I do a late night show with a guy from Detroit.
Right.
And we cover all the Michigan sports areas, and Wednesday's been a busy night.
Yeah.
But tonight's
definitely
been dead.
Yeah, well, there was only one NHL game.
Yeah, that's unheard of for a Wednesday night. Like, one game in the whole league? What?
Yeah, the NHL schedule is definitely unique in March, so.
I think the word is cuckoo.
What'd you say? I'm sorry?
I think the word is cuckoo.
Yeah, whoever made the schedule, whew, the Wild, I think, play every other night. I think they play at least 5 games a week. I know Pittsburgh in March plays like 4 games each week. So,
is it by Gary Bettman by any chance?
I don't know.
Gary Bettman to blame on anything. It's the just the way the whole thing sets up with the bye week deal. That just messes everything up.
And they had meetings in New York about what to do about the Olympics for next year, but nothing was determined as of yet.
Mm-hmm.
No, but
well, what
speaking
are you
of that, did you
know,
hear?
A lot of the owners have come out and said that, you know, that they will excuse their players to play.
All right.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing is that shortly after the NHL came out and said, well, we're not sure about it, the Capitals owner actually came out and said, we will be playing anybody from the Hershey Bears, which is their AHL team, so that our players can go play for their country. I am not going to stand in the way of one of my players saying, okay, I want to go play for my country. So he's allowing his players that want to go play in the Olympics to go play regardless of the NHL's decision. And
mm-hmm.
he said that if they have to play the entire Hershey Bears team while the pros go play the Olympics, he's fine with that. He said it's worth, you know, losing a couple of games for them to represent their country. My curiosity lies in how many other owners are going to do that too, because once it's kind of like once one does it, then it follows. Yeah.
Well, and there's a lot of teams actually that have stepped up to that too. You know, the Wild have done it. I think St. Louis have done it. There's a couple other teams that have done it too, and the IHF has agreed to pay for the players to go over and play. As far as, you know, how much it's going to cost them for, you know, travel fare and room and board and all that kind of stuff. Like, these guys need that, but they're also putting up the insurance policies for the players in case they get
right.
hurt.
Right.
Which is the biggest thing. So it's just a power play by the NHL players,
by the NHL
to try to break the players' union, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, too bad nobody scored in the power play either. Oh.
Yeah.
Just a little hockey humor.
I got it. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a good thing I didn't do my Sam Rose impersonation.
We'll have to say that for another show.
Yeah, yes.
Yep.
And if you heard that, you'd probably kill me.
Yep.
It's not a power play goal. Oh, no. Whoa.
Well,
sorry,
Lou,
Sam.
Thank you again for supporting our show and calling in. And we hope to talk with you next week. If you don't call
in,
we will
know. If I get
done
earlier, there's no leaked show, I will.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Well, you have
Thank
a wonderful
you.
Week, and we will talk to you soon.
Yes, you will. Good night.
Have a great night.
I will.
Well, it was nice to hear from Lou. Haven't heard from him in a couple of weeks. Glad to know he's okay.
Right.
But, you know, that's our show for tonight. Wow, what an amazing show. And I hope everybody enjoyed our top 10 list and the fun that we had making them and the fun that Jimmy and I always have when we're on this show. But next week we may or may not have a special guest. I haven't gotten confirmation. But the following week, Brandon Thomas will be on the show with us. and he's from Sports Elite, and he wanted to talk some hockey, so he asked me if he could be on the show, and I said, of course. So we will be hopefully having two special guests within the next 2 weeks, and keep those questions coming. Again, you know, we thank you guys for your fanship and the interaction that you guys give with us. And, Jimmy, I hope you have a great week, but I know we'll be talking tomorrow anyway. So.
Absolutely. And thanks again for everybody that does listen in, and we do appreciate that. So.
Yes, we do, definitely. All right, everybody have a great week, and we will see you back here next week at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time.